Osho, The Dhammapada, The Way of the Buddha, Volume 6, Discourse Number 2.
The first question. Bhagwan, I am confused about which path I am on. Sometimes I feel filled with joy when playing, singing, dancing, or fighting with others, and I can only see myself by looking at others. At other times, I can't stand to be with anyone or relate at all. I am only happy being completely with myself. When I am with people, I judge that I am escaping my aloneness, and when I am with myself, I judge that I am avoiding love. Is not it possible to be on both paths, alternating between them? How can I tell when I am using one to escape the other? Prem endeavor. There is no goal and no path for people like you. You are just crazy. Buddha is talking about sane people. Buddha is a very rational person. He divides, categorizes. But there is a third category Buddha is not aware of. The Sufis know about the third category. They call the mastas, the mad people. There is no need for you to alternate, because alternating between one path and the other, you will always feel this problem, the judgment. When you will be on one, you will think that you are missing the other. And this will become an unnecessary anguish. You simply be wherever you are. Enjoy the moment. All the moments of love and the moments of meditation. And don't be bothered with the others. In a particular moment, be totally in it. Playing, loving, dancing, singing. Forget that there is another path. And while you are feeling silent, still, alone, and enjoying your aloneness, forget that there is any path called love. It is not a question of consciously alternating between the two. Otherwise you will become divided, schizophrenic. And to be schizophrenic is to fall below normal sanity. Mastas, the really mad people, don't fall below sanity. They go above it. They transcend it. They both look mad because both are no more in the world of reason. One has fallen below it, one has gone above it. In a sense, they are alike, and in a sense, they are absolutely different. In the world, you are a master. Rejoice in being whatsoever you are. And this is the best that can happen to a man. What is happening to you? It is just natural for you to be sometimes with others and enjoying their company, and sometimes to be with yourself and enjoying your own company. It is like day and night for you. You need not choose the days followed by the night on its own accord. It is like summer and winter. It is not a question of choice on your part. It is something spontaneous and natural that is happening to you. I am tremendously happy with you. So you simply be as you are. Drop this judgment. So let me state it clearly. There are three possibilities. One, meditation. Second, love. Third, one can just be crazy. No question of choice. No question of deliberately going on a certain path, forcing yourself on a certain path. And there are many here who are in the same situation. At least 20 questions have come to me. And the same is the problem. If there is no question for you, and you can enjoy meditation without ever being worried about love, then that is your path. If you can enjoy love without ever being dragged by meditation, distracted by meditation, that is your path. If you find yourself in a deep synthesis that both are happening, then that is your path. My whole effort here is to help you to be your natural self. Any imposition is a violation. In the word, rejoice in being whatsoever you are. There is no goal for you, no path for you. Rejoicing is the goal, rejoicing is the path. In fact, we are all where we should be. We already are there. The paths are needed to awaken us. Don't be disturbed by the word path, because it gives you the idea as if you have to go somewhere, reach somewhere. It is because of the language. We have to use some words, and every word is loaded with our mundane meanings. Hence the Buddhas have always found it difficult how to commune with you. Silence you can't understand because you can't be silent. That is the best thing, if you can sit silently with a Buddha, even for a single minute, and all is conveyed. Here being with me, My real message is between the words, the pauses, the intervals, not in the words. Read me between the lines, not in the lines, and you will be able to understand me more. There is a beautiful story. A mystic received a letter. The letter had come from another mystic. But the letter from the person was absolutely empty. Nothing was written on it. There has been a problem. The man who had written the letter was older in age. But the man to whom the letter was written was older in enlightenment. He had become enlightened before. So how to start the letter? In India, if you are writing to an older person, you have to be very respectful. So how to start? How to address the person? He is younger physically, so you cannot show respect. You have to show love. But he is older as far as enlightenment is concerned. So you cannot talk to him as if you are talking to a young man, younger than you. You have to be respectful. The mystic was puzzled. And if you cannot start the letter, how can you write it? So he sent the empty paper. The mystic received it. He read it, rejoiced in it. He was so happy that a disciple who was sitting close by asked, "You look so happy. Can I also read the letter?" The letter was passed to the disciple. Then he read it and rejoiced in it. Then the third person who was present became interested. There seemed to be something very mysterious. But this man was not a disciple. Just out of curiosity he had come to see the man. He said, "Can I also have a look?" Both the master and the disciple hesitated. They looked at each other, what to say to this man. The man became even more intrigued. He said, "Is there something very mysterious in it?" They said, "There is really nothing in it. It is a very rare letter. You will not understand its language. That's why we are hesitating. We don't want to offend you. But if you insist, you can see." The man looked this side and that side. There was nothing at all. He returned the letter without saying anything and rushed out. These both people seemed to be mad. Silence Buddhas cannot use with you, because then you will not understand. You will escape. They have to use words. Words which have your meanings. So they have to be very, very alert in choosing their words. But even then, those words are inadequate. The word path is so inadequate that Lao Tzu uses always the pathless path. Now, what is the sense of saying pathless path? It is empty paper, gateless gate, effortless effort, action in inaction, wube. All these contradictions together, paradoxes together, just to shake and shock you out of your sleep. Otherwise, there is no path and there is nowhere to go. You are already there. You have been always there. All that is needed is wake up. And in the verse, I can see you are coming out of your dreams, your sleep. I can see you turning and tossing in your bed. The morning is not very far away. Please don't be worried about the paths. Because that worry can keep you asleep. Don't judge any moment. Don't compare any moment with another moment. Because every comparison is a thought process. And every thought process keeps you attached to the mind. Relax. Whatsoever happens, allow it to happen. Be in a let go. And I am saying these things to you because that is the easiest thing for you. Just be in a let go. God is going to come to you. You are not going to find Him. The goal is going to happen to you. And it can happen anywhere. There is no path leading to it. In fact, it is our own reality. We have simply to be alert to see. In Japan, there is the beautiful story of a really great Buddha, Hotei. He is called in Japan the Laughing Buddha. Because the moment he became enlightened, he started laughing. People asked him, "Why are you laughing?" He said, "Because I have become enlightened." But they said, "We can't see any relationship between enlightenment and laughing and laughter. What is the point of laughing?" Hotei said, "I am laughing because I am searching for something which was already in me. I was searching the seeker. It was impossible to seek it. Where you can seek the seeker? How can you know the knower? It was like a dog chasing its own tail. Are you chasing your own shadow? You cannot catch hold of it. It was so ridiculous. The whole effort was so absurd. That's why I am laughing. I have always been a Buddha. Now it looks very strange that for millions of lives, how I remained unconscious. It seems unbelievable that how I went on missing myself. Now that I have known, a great laughter is arising in me." And it is said he continued to laugh till his death. That was his only message to the world. He must have been a man like Indivas. Just crazy, far out. the second question. Bhagwan, can someone who is not open wake up? Deva Asoka, it is impossible to wake up if you are not open. Opening to existence is what waking up is all about. Open to the sun, to the moon, to the rain, to the wind. Open to this whole celebration of the trees, of the rocks, the earth and the stars, of animals, birds, people. Existence is a celebration, a continuous festival, a carnival. If you are not open, if you are closed, if you don't have any windows and doors towards existence, how can you wake up? Waking up and being open are synonymous. People remain closed in their minds. They never come out of their minds, and they never allow reality to penetrate to their hearts. A very transparent China wall divides them from the world, and the world is divine. Existence is God. And why people remain closed? They are afraid of being open, because when you are open, you are insecure, unguarded. When you are open, you are vulnerable. When you are open, you don't know what is going to happen. Everything is a surprise. You are moving into the unknown. Each moment brings the unknown to your door. The closed mind is afraid of the unknown. The closed mind is interested in the known. Why? Because with the known, it is easier to manage. The mind knows everything about it. He is clever and efficient about it. But a closed mind is really below normal. He is not yet human. He cannot be intelligent. Intelligence needs constant challenges, encounters with reality. Because only through those encounters your intelligence is sharpened. Your potential becomes actual. Deva Asoka, it is impossible to remain closed and wake up. You are trying that, I know. But it is not possible in the very nature of things. I feel deep compassion for you. I want to help you. but you won't allow me. You won't allow me to take your hand in my hands. You won't allow my energy to touch your heart, to move it, to bring a dance to it. You remain alert. You remain alert only to guard yourself. You are afraid. Afraid of falling in deep love. Because the moment you fall in deep love, the ego disappears. It is a kind of death. And one cannot be guaranteed what will happen afterwards. Resurrection always looks like a myth. Although it happens, it is inevitable. If you are ready to die, resurrection happens. The last words of Jesus were, "Forgive these people because they know not what they are doing. And I don't ask anything from you. Let thy will be done. Let thy kingdom come." This is surrender. This is totally opening up to God. No complaints, no grudge, not even against those who are murdering him. The trust is total. It is because of this trust that the resurrection happens. It may not be a historical fact that Jesus revived after 3 days, but it is a metaphysical fact. And a metaphysical fact is far more real than a historical fact. It shows something of the depths of human beings. If you can die as an ego, you will be resurrected as a Buddha, as a Christ. Come out of your mind, Asoka. But we go on moving in circles. The mother took her son to the psychiatrist and complained that he was always thinking about sex. The doctor drew a square on a piece of paper, looked at the boy and asked, "Son, what comes to your mind when you see this drawing?" The kid answered, "Looks like a window." The doc said, "What do you think is going on behind that window?" "People are behind that window," replied the kid. "They are hugging, kissing, and making love." The doctor then drew a circle and asked, "What comes to your mind when you see this?" The kid said, "That's a porthole." "And what do you think is going on behind that porthole?" inquired the doctor. "Ah," said the kid, "there is people behind that porthole with their clothes off, drinking, making love and having a ball." The doctor said, "Son, would you mind leaving the room? I would like to discuss this with your mother." The boy got up to leave, and as he reached the door, he turned around and said, "Hey, Doc, can I have those dirty pictures you drew?" A closed mind goes on interpreting life, existence, according to one's own prejudices, concepts, unconsciously acquired, and hence remains unavailable to the reality. Even if you come across a Buddha, even if you meet Christ or Krishna or Confucius, you will miss. They can talk to you about the ultimate, but you will listen only about the mundane. They will talk about the sacred, but you will not listen what they are talking. You will listen according to your closed mind. It has fixed ideas. It was the nurse day off, and the doctor stuck his head into the waiting room to ask, who is next? When a patient left, one guy got up and said, me, doc. What's your trouble? Asked the doctor. So the guy told him. The doctor grabbed him by the arm, pulled him into his office, and bawled him out, never do that again. Especially not in a room full of people. Next time just say that your nose or your eyes bother you. A couple of weeks went by and the fellow came back. The nurse was off again, and when the doctor asked, who is next? The same guy said, I am. The doctor asked, what is your trouble? The guy replied, my ears bothering me. What is wrong with it? I can't urinate out of it. Even great advice is of no use. You will come to your own conclusion again and again. That's how you have been missing Asoka. Much that is possible here. Be open. You have nothing to lose. Be open. Just look what you can lose if you open up. What have you got? But people go on guarding their emptiness, their nothingness, their begging bowels. So much afraid. In India, we have a saying that once a naked man was asked that we never see you taking a bath. He said, I never take a bath. Because if you put your clothes on the bank and you go to take the bath in the river, somebody may steal them. The people who were asking, they said, but you are naked. Why you should be worried about the clothes? But the man is not ready even to see that he is naked. He wants to believe that he has beautiful garments. Who wants to see one's nakedness? And Asoka, you are empty. You are naked. There is nothing to lose. Relax and open. And you have all to gain. You have everything, the whole universe to gain. Just by waking up, one becomes the master. Otherwise, one remains a slave. The third question. Bhagwan, let us see you get out of this one, you tricky rascal. You tell us often that sannyas does not mean renouncing the world, but the ego. Yet when we decide to stay with you, we end up renouncing our homes, jobs, money, and possessions, our private space, sometimes our family and friends too. We don't make any formal renunciation, but it happens anyway, and we flourish and are perfectly happy. You are so devious. But it is beautiful. Pramod. Sannyas can have two possibilities. One is a formal renunciation. That means repression. That means escape. That is ugly. That has been the way in the past. It is life negative. It is anti-life. It promises you all the joys in heaven. In fact, it is out of greed that you renounce the world. The formal renunciation is pseudo. It is plastic. It is not a real flower. It has no fragrance. On the contrary, it is deep down a great greed. Greed for the other life, for the eternal life, for the joys of heaven. You just look in the scriptures of the world and you will be surprised the way they describe heaven or paradise. Is nothing but the dream of a very greedy, sensuous, materialistic mind. It has nothing to do with religion at all. In the Mohammedan idea of heaven, there are beautiful women. They always remain young. And not only beautiful women, but because in Mohammedan countries, homosexuality has been a long, long tradition, young boys are also available. Beautiful young boys. And rivers of wine. You need not go to a pub. Rivers of wine. Drink, swim, dive deep into the wine. And trees are of gold, and flowers are of diamonds and emeralds. What kind of dream is this? Whose dream is this? Greed projected. It is not renunciation. It looks renunciation. It is not so. And the same is the case with the Hindu heaven and the Christian paradise. In fact, the Christian word paradise comes from the Arabic Firdaus. Firdaus means a walled garden of pleasure. Just as emperors and great kings used to have a walled garden of pleasure. In order to gain to it, you have to renounce this world. If you look at it in the true light, then the so-called worldly people are not so worldly, not so materialistic as the so-called otherworldly. It is because of this that this country, which thinks itself very religious, is not at all religious. It is very materialistic. On the surface, religion, but deep down, the desire for the pleasures. The second kind of sannyas I am introducing into the world is not a formal renunciation. In fact, I never use the word renunciation at all. I say sannyas is rejoicing. Rejoice in life, in love, in meditation, in the beauties of the world, in the ecstasy of existence. Rejoice in each and everything. Transform the mundane into the sacred. Transform this soul into the other soul. Transform the earth into paradise. And then, indirectly, Pramod, you are right that a certain renunciation starts happening. But that happens, you don't do it. It is not a doing, it is an happening. You start renouncing your foolishnesses. You start renouncing rubbish. You start renouncing meaningless relationships. You start renouncing jobs which were not fulfilling to your being. You start renouncing places where growth was not possible. But I don't call it renunciation. I call it understanding, awareness. If you are carrying stones in your hand, thinking that they are diamonds, I will not tell you to renounce those stones. I will simply say, be alert and have another look. If you see yourself that they are not diamonds, is there any need to renounce them? They will fall from your hands on their own accord. In fact, if you still want to carry them, you will have to make great efforts. You will have to bring great will to carry them still. But you cannot carry them long. Once you have seen that they are useless, meaningless, you are bound to throw them away. And once your hands are empty, you can search for the real treasures. And the real treasures are not in the future, as they used to be in the old concept of sannyas. The real treasures are right now, here. A very handsome young chap was recently hired in a large accounting firm. In a short while, the young man came to Mr. Diamond, his department head, and said, "I am sorry to tell you, but some of the young ladies in this office are tempting me sorely." "Be firm, young man," was the reply, "and you will get your reward in heaven." A few weeks later, the lad complained again. "Mr. Diamond," he said, "I don't know what to do. This time it is that beautiful redhead who is pursuing me. Resist, my son, and you will get your reward in heaven." "I don't know how much longer I can resist," the young man said. "By the way, Mr. Diamond, what do you think this reward will be that I will get in heaven?" "A bale of hay, you jackass." Yes, that's what you will get. If your renunciation is to get something in the other world, you will simply get a bale of hay, you jackass. Because it is greed projected. And greed is going to remain unfulfilled. The so-called religious people are greedy for the eternal. And you become religious only when greed disappears totally. Heaven is not somewhere else. It is a way of living. So is hell, a style of life. Hell is living unconsciously. Heaven is living consciously. Hell is your own creation, so is heaven. If you go on living unconsciously, through your unconscious desires, instincts, motives, of which you are not the master, but only victims, then you create a hell around yourself. But if you start living a conscious life, a life of bringing more and more light to the deeper dark corners of your being, if you start living full of light, your life is moment to moment ecstatic. There is no need for trees to be of gold. They are perfectly beautiful as they are. In fact, a tree of gold will be a dead tree. And the roses need not be of diamonds. Roses of diamonds will not be roses. They will not be alive. And only stupid people need rivers of wine. A man who lives consciously is so drunk with the joy of sheer breathing, with the joy of sheer being, with the joy of the birds singing and the sun rising in the morning. He is so drunk with existence, he needs no other drug, alcohol, or LSD, or mescaline, or marijuana. He needs nothing. He is always in a psychedelic ecstasy. And that ecstasy is something his inner being releases. It is his own fragrance. Not only that he is drunk, whosoever comes to him, stays with him, becomes drunk with his being. I am a drunkard. If you allow yourself to be here and available to me, you are bound to become drunkards. That's what has happened, Pramod. I am not devious. I am simply a drunkard. And I am not trying you to renounce the world in devious ways. I am simply trying to make you aware of the real world. When the real is known, the false disappears. To know the real as real is enough. The false disappears. It becomes insubstantial. If you are here with me, it is not that you had to renounce your family. On the contrary, you are here with me because you have found your family here. If you have dropped out of your job, it is not that because of that you are here. On the contrary, you have found your creativity here. You have found your joy here. You have found your real authentic work. Hence, the false has disappeared. It is a transformation process. But my emphasis is never on renouncing anything. My emphasis is in rejoicing more and more. And your rejoicing is bound to change your life patterns. You can't remain the same when you meditate, when you become aware. How can you remain the same? How can you go on doing the same foolish things? It was possible when you were unconscious. It is impossible when you become conscious. A soldier just returned from 3 years overseas arrived at a camp near his hometown. He was naturally very anxious to see his wife, but try as he would, he could not possibly wangle over 2 hours' leave. After 6 hours' absence, he came back to the camp. "Why the hell are you 4 hours AWOL? Barked the sergeant. "Well, you see," said the soldier, "when I got home, I found my wife in the bathtub, and it took me 4 hours to dry out my uniform." When you live an unconscious life, you live in a different way. When Tom, the rising young insurance executive, appeared at his friend Ed's home in the early morning hours, asking to be put up for the night, Ed was concerned by his friend's hollow-eyed appearance. "What happened, Tom? You and your wife had a fight?" "Eh, when I got home tonight, I was really beat. Tired as hell. So when she asked me for $50 for a new dress, well, I guess I must have been half asleep or something, because I said, 'All right, but let us finish this dictation first.'" "Are you all British or what?" "Can't you get such a simple joke?" Living an unconscious life, you are bound even to miss jokes. The moment you change from mind to meditation, your whole life is going to be affected. It is natural. If it is not affected, that will be something unnatural. Your relationship is bound to change. For example, a man may be believing that he loves his wife. The moment he starts meditating, things will become clear and transparent, whether he loves or not. He may never have loved her. He may be simply using her as a sex object. Or he may be using her as a mother substitute. He may be using her because he is unable to be alone. But he may not have ever loved her. He may be dependent on her. She may have great utility. But to use another human being is immoral, is ugly. And to pretend that you love. And I'm not saying that you are consciously doing it. It may be just an unconscious thing. You may not be even aware that you don't love her. You may also think that you love her. You may not be deceiving her deliberately. You may be deceiving her and you will be deceived yourself too. But if you start meditating, things will become clear. You will have more light in your life. Just as when you bring a candle into the dark room, you start seeing clearly. The window in the darkness was looking like a door. Now it is no more a door. Or the painting, the frame of the painting in the darkness and dimness was looking like a window. It is no more a window. Now you see things clearly. You cannot behave in the old way. You will have to change. You will have to rearrange your whole life. That's what happens to every sannyasin. If your love was true, it will be deepened. If it was false, it will disappear. If your respect for your parents were just a formality, it will disappear. If your respect for your parents was a reality, it will become more and more profound. The work that you were doing, if it was your heart's fulfillment, you will go deeper into it. A painter will become a greater painter. A musician will have new visions. A poet will have new insights. If the poet was really a poet, only then. If the poet was just playing with arranging words and was writing poetry just to become famous, and the poetry was not his love affair, he was not ready to sacrifice his life for it, then poetry will disappear. But it is not renouncing anything. You are not renouncing anything. Few things are disappearing, few other things will appear. One thing is certain. After meditation, whatsoever happens, after mahasannyas, whatsoever happens, is going to give you more fulfillment, more maturity, more rootedness, more centering. It will become a life which does not only grow old, but also grows towards heights and depths. You will start living not only a horizontal life, but a vertical life too. you will live in the horizontal as far as it is needed. Otherwise, 90% of your energies will start moving in the vertical dimension towards heights and depths. Then this earth, this world, becomes only an opportunity to grow. And the man who is using the world, the earth, this life, as an opportunity to grow, is on the right track. If you not only grow in age, but you also become grown-ups, then you have lived rightly. And it is not renunciation. It is rejoicing. It is being grateful to God. Your society, your parents, your teachers, your priests, your politicians, they have all tried to impose something upon you that you are carrying. But anything imposed on you will remain a burden. And you will be crushed under the weight of it. And the weight will go on growing every day. The function of the master is to undo what the teachers and the priests and the parents and the politicians have done to you. Here I only make things clear to you. I don't impose any discipline. I don't give you any characters. I simply give you more consciousness, more light. Then you have to find your character. Then you have to find your life style, your life pattern. I give you just a small candle. Then you can find your path into the darkness of life. And even a small candle is enough. If a little space around you becomes lighted and you can take 3-4 steps in the light, that's enough. Because by the time you have taken 4 steps, the light goes 4 steps ahead of you. With a small candle, one can pass through 10,000 miles of darkness. And I am not against life at all, as the old sannyas was. The old sannyas had a very strange idea. That if you want to attain to God, you have to be anti-life, as if God is against life. If God is against life, life would not exist even for a single moment. Who goes on nursing life? Who goes on pouring energy into life? The great Indian poet Rabindranath has said, whenever a child is born, I dance, I rejoice. Why? Because a new child gives me an absolute certainty that God has not yet become hopeless, that He still hopes. Each new child brings this certainty to the world. That God is still interested in humanity. That He has not abandoned the project. That He still hopes that Buddhas will be born. That He still goes on creating new children. That He is not tired. That His hope is infinite and His patience is infinite. God loves the world. It is His creation. To deny it is to deny Him. If you deny the painting, you have denied the painter. If you condemn the poetry, you have condemned the poet. If you reject the dance, you have rejected the dancer. And this has been the stupid logic for centuries. Accept God, praise God, and deny life. And these same people went on saying again and again that God created the world. Then why He created the world? So that you can renounce it? So that you can reject it? So that you can condemn it and become great saints? God created the world as an opportunity to grow. Growth needs many, many opportunities, challenges. I have heard a story. A farmer, an old farmer, mature, seasoned, one day was too much angry with God, and he was a great devotee. He said to God in his morning prayer that I have to tell it as it is. Enough is enough. You don't understand even ABC of agriculture. When the rains are needed, there are no rains. When the rains are not needed, you go on pouring. What nonsense is this? If you don't understand agriculture, you can ask me. I have devoted my whole life. You give me one chance. The coming season, let me decide and see what happens. It is an ancient story. In those days, people had such trust that they could have talked so directly to God, and their trust was such that the answer was bound to happen. God said, okay, this season you decide. So the farmer decided, and he was very much happy, because whenever he wanted sun, there was sun. Whenever he wanted rain, there was rain. Whenever he wanted clouds, there were clouds. And he avoided all the dangers. All the dangers that can become destructive to his crops, he simply rejected them. No strong winds, no possibility of any destruction to his crops. And his wheat started growing so high that nobody has ever seen. It was going above man's height. And he was very happy that now I will sow him. And then the crop was cut. And he was very much puzzled. There was no wheat at all. Just the husk empty with no wheat in it. What happened? Such big plants, such big plants could have given wheat four times bigger than the ordinary wheat, but there was no wheat at all. And suddenly he heard laughter from the clouds. God laughed and he said, now, what do you say? He said, I am puzzled, because there was no possibility of destruction, and all that was helpful was provided for, and the plants were going so good, and the crop was so green and so beautiful. What happened to my wheat? God said, because there was no dangers, you avoided all dangers, it was impossible for the wheat to grow. They need challenges. Challenge brings integrity. Otherwise, a person remains hollow, empty. If all facilities are provided for you, and there is no danger for your life, you will remain hollow and empty. God gives life with all its dangers. Mahasannyas is to accept this challenge. To live dangerously is what Mahasannyas is all about. And the more dangerously you live, the more risks you take, the more you grow, the more you become integrated, crystallized, the more your soul becomes a clear-cut, defined phenomenon. Otherwise, it remains vague, cloudy, doubtful. I am all for life. If you ask me, to me, God and His creation are not two separate things. The Creator has become His own creation. The creation and the Creator are one. I am in immense love with life. And this is my message to you. Love life. Totally. Get involved with life. Don't hold back. Because whatsoever you will hold back will remain empty. Become committed to life. A multi-dimensional commitment is needed. The scientists say that even the greatest amongst human beings use only 15% of their potential. Even the greatest, what about the normal people? They use only 5 to 7% of their potential. Just think, if every person was using his 100% potential, if each person was a torch burning from both the ends together, with intensity, with passion, with love, then life will be a sheer celebration. And you will see so many Christs and so many Buddhas walking on the earth. But because of this old idea of renunciation, we have missed much. I want to bring a totally new concept of sannyas to the world. A sannyas that loves, a sannyas that knows how to become committed, a sannyas that goes to the deepest core of life, but nobody else can decide it for you. Not even I can decide for you. I can only make things clear to you. I can give you the map. But you have to go. You have to journey. You have to move. And remember one thing. My map will be really my map. And it can't exactly be your map. It may give you few hints, few indications, but it can't exactly be your map, because you are a totally different person. You are so unique that nobody's map can be your map. Yes, understanding my map, you will become aware of many things about yourself, but you are not to follow it blindly. Otherwise, you will become a pseudo-human being. Listen to me.
to my words, to my silence, to my being. Try to understand what is happening here, what is transpiring here, and then decide on your own. Don't throw the responsibility on anybody else's shoulders. This is the way to grow. This is the way to arrive.
The fourth question. Bhagwan, I have many friends, but the question, who is a real friend, always arises in my mind. Will you say something about it? Satyam. You are asking from the wrong end. Never ask, who is my real friend? Ask, am I a real friend to somebody? That is the right question. Why you are worried about others, whether they are true friends to you or not? The proverb is, a friend in need is a friend indeed. But that is deep down greed. That is not friendship, that is not love. You want to use the other as a means. And no man is a means. Every man is an end unto himself. Why you are so much worried who is a real friend? A young honeymoon couple were touring southern Florida and stopped at a rattlesnake farm along the road. After seeing the sights, they engaged in a small talk with the man that handled the snakes. "Gosh," exclaimed the new bride, "you certainly have a dangerous job. Don't you ever get bitten by the snakes?" "Yes, I do," answered the handler. "Well," she insisted, "just what do you do when you are bitten by a snake?" "I always carry a razor sharp knife in my pocket, and as soon as I am bitten, I make a deep crisscross mark across the fang wound, and then suck the poison from the wound." "Watch. Ah, what would happen if you were to accidentally sit on a rattler?" persisted the bride. "Ma'am," answered the snake handler, "that will be the day I learn who my real friends are." Why you are worried? The real question has to be, am I friendly to people? Do you know what friendship is? It is the highest form of love. In love, some lust is bound to be there. In friendship, all lust disappears. In friendship, nothing grass remains. It becomes absolutely subtle. It is not a question of using the other. It is not a question of even needing the other. It is a question of sharing. You have too much and you would like to share. And whosoever is ready to share with you your joy, your dance, your song, you will be grateful to him. You will feel obliged. Not that he is obliged to you. Not that he should feel thankful to you because you have given so much to him. A friend never thinks in that way. A friend always feels grateful to those people who allow him to love them, to give them whatsoever he has got. Love is greed. You will be surprised to know that the English word love comes from a Sanskrit word lobha. Lobha means greed. How lobha became love is a strange story. In Sanskrit, it is greed. The original root means greed. But the love, as we know it, is really nothing but greed masquerading as love. It is hidden greed. Satyam making friendship with the idea of using people is taking a wrong step from the very beginning. Friendship has to be a sharing. If you have something, share it. And whosoever is ready to share with you is a friend. It is not a question of need. It is not a question that when you are in a danger, the friend has to come to your help. That is irrelevant. He may come, he may not come. But if he does not come, you don't have any complaints. If he comes, you are grateful. But if he does not come, it's perfectly okay. It is his decision to come or not to come. You don't want to manipulate him. You don't want to make him feel guilty. You will not have any grudge. You will not say to him that when I was in need, you didn't turn up. What kind of friend you are? Friendship is not something of the marketplace. Friendship is one of those rare things which belong to the temple and not to the shop. But you are not aware of that kind of friendship. You will have to learn. Friendship is a great art. Love has a natural instinct behind it. Friendship has no natural instinct behind it. Friendship is something conscious. Love is unconscious.
You fall in love with a woman. Why we say falling in love? That phrase is significant. Falling in love. Nobody ever rises in love. Everybody falls in love. Why you fall in love? Because it is falling from the conscious to the unconscious, from intelligence to instinct. What we call love is more animalistic than human. Friendship is absolutely human. It has something for which there is no inbuilt mechanism in your biology. It is non-biological. Hence, one rises in friendship. One does not fall in friendship. It has a spiritual dimension. But don't ask, who is a real friend? Ask, am I a real friend? Always be concerned with yourself. We are always thinking about others. The man thinks whether the woman really loves me or not. The woman thinks whether the man really loves me or not. And how can you be absolutely certain about the other? It is impossible. He may repeat 1,000 times that he loves you, and he will love you forever. But still the doubt is bound to persist. Who knows whether he is saying the truth or not? In fact, repeating something 1,000 times simply means it must be a lie. Because truth need not be repeated so much. Adolf Hitler, in his autobiography, says, there is not much difference between truth and a lie. The only difference is that a truth is a lie repeated so often that you have forgotten that it is a lie. That's what the experts in advertisement will say. Go on repeating. Go on advertising. Don't be worried whether anybody is listening or not. Even if they are not paying any attention, don't be worried. Their subliminal minds are listening. Their deepest core is being getting impressed. You don't look at the advertisements very consciously, but just passing through them in the movie, on the TV, or in the newspaper. Just a glance, and the imprint is there, and it is going to be repeated again and again. Lux toilet soap, or Coca-Cola. Coca-Cola is the only international thing. Even in Soviet Russia, Coca-Cola. Everything American is banned and barred, but not Coca-Cola. Coca-Cola is the only international thing. Go on repeating. In the beginning, electric was used for advertisement. Static electric was used. It remained Coca-Cola. But later on they discovered that if you put it on and off, that is far more effective. Because the man passing by will read only once if the light remains static. But if it changes, goes on and off again and again, by the time you pass it, even in a car, at least 5 to 7 times, you would have to read it, Coca-Cola, Coca-Cola, Coca-Cola. That goes deeper. And sooner or later, you become impressed. That's how all the religions have lived up to now. They go on repeating. The same stupid beliefs. But those beliefs become truths to people. People are ready to die for them. Now nobody has seen where heaven is, but millions of people have died for heaven. Mohammedans say that if you die in a religious war, you will immediately go to heaven and all your sins are forgiven. And Christians also say that in a religious war, in a crusade, if you die, you immediately go to the heaven. Then everything else is forgiven. And millions of people have died and killed others, believing that this is the truth. We have seen such things happening even in this 20th century. It doesn't seem to be very grown up in that way. Adolf Hitler repeated for 20 years continuously that Jews are the cause of all the misery. And a very intelligent nation like Germany started believing in him. What to say about ordinary people? Even people like Martin Heidegger, one of the greatest philosophers Germany has produced in this century, believed that Adolf Hitler is right. He supported Adolf Hitler. A man of the intelligence of Martin Heidegger supporting a stupid, mad person like Adolf Hitler. What must be the secret? The secret is repeat. Go on repeating. Even Jews started believing that it must be true. We must be the cause. Otherwise, how so many intelligent people can believe it? If so many people believe it, there must be something in it. You have been brought up with such beliefs, such ideas, which have no foundation in reality. And if you go on living according to them, you will live in vain. You have to go through a radical change. Ask questions about yourself, don't ask about others. It is impossible to be certain of the other, and there is no need either. How you can be certain of the other? The other is a flux. This moment, the other person may be loving, and the next moment he may not be loving. There can be no promise. You can only be certain about yourself. And that too for the moment only. And there is no need to think for the whole future. Think in terms of the moment and the present. Live in the present. If this moment is full of friendship and the fragrance of friendship, why be worried about the next moment? The next moment will be born out of this moment. It is bound to be of a higher quality, deeper quality. It will bring the same fragrance. to a higher altitude, there is no need to think about it. Just live the moment in deep friendship. And friendship need not be addressed to anyone in particular. That is also a rotten idea, that you have to be friend to a certain person. Just be friendly. Rather than creating friendship, create friendliness. Let it become a quality of your being, a climate that surrounds you. So whomsoever you come in contact, you are friendly. This whole existence has to be befriended. And if you can befriend the existence, existence will befriend you thousandfold. It returns you in the same coin, but multiplied. It echoes you. If you throw stones at existence, you will be getting back many more stones. If you throw flowers, flowers will be coming back. Life is a mirror. It reflects your face. Be friendly. And the whole life will reflect friendliness. People know perfectly well that if you are friendly to a dog, even the dog becomes friendly to you. So friendly. And there are people who have known that if you are friendly to a tree, the tree becomes friendly to you. Try great experiments in friendship. Try with a rosebush and see the miracles. Slowly, slowly it will happen. Because man has not been behaving with trees in a friendly way. Hence they have become very much afraid. But now scientists say that when you come with an axe to cut a tree, even before you have started cutting it, the tree goes into a shiver, a cold shiver. It goes into a great fear, panic. You have not even started, but just the intention, as if the tree becomes aware of your intention. Now they have sophisticated instruments, just like cardiograms, which can make graphs on the paper. What the tree is feeling. When the tree is feeling joyous, there is a rhythm on the graph. When the tree is feeling afraid, the fear is shown on the graph. When the tree sees the friend coming, it rejoices, it jumps, it dances. The graph shows immediately a dance. When the tree sees the gardener coming, have you ever said hello to a tree? Try, and one day you will be surprised that the tree also says hello in her own tongue, in her own language. Hug a tree, and a day will come soon when you will feel that it was not only you who were hugging the tree was responding back, that you were also hugged by the tree, although the tree has no hands, but it has its own way of expressing its joy, its sadness, its anger, its fear. The whole existence is sensitive. That's what I mean when I say that existence is God. Be friendly, satyam, and don't be worried whether anybody is friendly towards you or not. That is a business-like question. Why be worried? Why not transform the whole existence into a friend towards you? Why miss such a great kingdom? The last question. Bhagwan, why are thousands of people from all over the world coming to you? Sandeep, it is a very difficult question for me to answer. How can I answer on behalf of thousands of people who are coming to me? They have different reasons. Few are coming to me because I have called them. They may know it, they may not know it. More possibility is that they will not know it. Not at least in the beginning. Only later on, as they become immersed into my commune, into my worlds, slowly, slowly they will become aware that they have been called forth. Just as Jesus called Lazarus out of his grave. Lazarus, come out! And he came out of his grave. The life that you have lived is the life of a grave. And I have called you. Few of you are being called. That's why you are here. About these people I can say why they are here, because I have called them. They have been with me for many lives. This is a long, long love affair with them. This is not for the first time they are there with me. This is the last time, certainly, because I am not going to come again. I have called them because of certain promises made in the past. But there are many kinds of people. Few have come just accidentally. But even though they have come accidentally, they have a certain potential in them. And their potential became involved with me. They were not consciously coming. They were not called. They were just passing by. But they got caught in the net. Few have come for certain needs to be fulfilled. There are few people who are in search of father figures. Because Friedrich Nietzsche says God is dead. And once God is dead, man feels empty. The West is feeling very empty. God is dead. And God was the Father, the permanent, eternal Father. It is not an accident that Christian priests are called Father. Although it is very strange because they don't have any children. They are unmarried. It is a strange world. Unmarried priests are called fathers. But it is perfectly logical because the Christian idea of God is also without a woman. How they manage it? God the Father, Christ the Son, at least let the Holy Ghost be a woman. But they don't allow even the Holy Ghost. The Trinity is not true. It is lacking something. It is missing something. The feminine energy is missing. But at least God was there. If not the Mother, God was there as the Father, a protector. And people were feeling protected. Whether there is God or not, that is not the question. But people were feeling protected. And on the earth was the Father, the priest, and Pope or Popa, the great Father, the highest priest. But Pope also means Father. Papa, Popa, Pope, whatsoever you call. Vatican has lost the grip on the West. The relationship between the Pope and the West is only formal. Christianity has become a Sunday religion. And exactly the same is the case in the East. All religions have become formal. Now people are in search of a father figure. Few people come because they are missing protection. They need protection. Either they will escape from me because I don't give protection. On the contrary, I take away all protection. They will escape because I don't give any security. On the contrary, I take all security away. I give you insecurity because to me insecurity is the right situation in which one grows. If there is no God, no Father, the whole responsibility falls on your own shoulders. And it is good. It is perfectly good. I absolutely agree with Friedrich Nietzsche. Buddha agreed also. Buddha says there is no God. Mahavira says there is no God for the simple reason that the idea of God has been dangerous. Dangerous in the sense that people feel protected and they stop growing. If you are unprotected, if you are under the sky, then you have to depend on your own self. Then you have to become more strong, more integrated. Then you are free to live in hell or heaven. Nobody can reward you or nobody can punish you. Few people are coming because they are missing the father figure. If they stay with me, I will transform this situation into a beautiful, positive phenomenon. If they escape, then it is up to them. It is very easy for them to escape because they will see that I am destroying, even if something is left of protection in their minds, I am destroying that too. I am taking away all patterns, structures, strategies of the mind. I want you to be utterly alone. So alone that you have to fall upon yourself. There is nowhere else to go. That you have to stand on your own legs. That you can't use any crutches. Few other people are coming to find some kind of consolation. They will also be shocked because I don't give any kind of consolation. A pretty model took her troubles to a psychiatrist. "Doctor, you must help me," she pleaded. "It has gotten so that every time a man takes me out, I wind up in bed with him, and then afterwards I feel guilty and depressed all day long." "I see," nodded the psychiatrist. "And you want me to strengthen your willpower?" "Heavens, no," exclaimed the model. "I want you to fix it so I won't feel guilty and depressed afterwards." Many people, consciously or unconsciously, are here to find some kind of consolation. Some kind of consolation so they don't feel guilty, so that they don't feel unworthy. But I am not here to give you consolation. Why give consolation when I can give you the real thing? Why give you plastic toys when I can help you to grow into a soul? Few other people come because they are on the verge of getting insane. And the psychology and the psychoanalysis and the psychiatry has not been of much help. It can help only up to a point. It can help a person to be normal if his madness is ordinary madness, but it cannot help to a person if his madness has something spiritual in it. People like R.D. Lang are becoming aware of it, that if a person's madness is because he is too sensitive and too alert and too aware of the misery in which people are living and he himself is living, if he becomes aware of the meaninglessness of this whole life that we have created on this earth, he is bound to go berserk. He will not be able to bear it. It will be unbearable. Those people cannot be held by psychiatry or psychoanalysis. Those people can only be helped if something like meditation starts happening in their being. So if some ordinary insane person comes here, I send him back to the West, because psychiatry is perfectly capable of helping him. There is no need for me to waste my time on that kind of person. There are other plumbers who can do that. I do a special kind of plumbing. If your insanity is spiritual, then I am here to help you. And the spiritual insanity is really a beautiful beginning. It can become the greatest blessing in your life. It is a blessing disguised as a curse. But still the question, Sandeep, is difficult because there are so many people and each person comes with a different motive. But I am not much concerned about your motives. I know why I am here. And I go on doing my thing. Irrespective of why you have come here, those who have something significant growing in them are bound to remain with me. Those who are courageous enough to move beyond the boundaries of the mind, beyond all boundaries and all limits. Those who are not courageous, they will live on their own accord. Many will be called, few will be chosen. Thousands will come, but only few will be transformed. It is all up to you. You can use this opportunity that I am making available to you. You can miss it too. It cannot be forced upon you. I am available, you can share. You can look through my eyes. I have opened a door, and I am standing on the door welcoming you. Why you have come is not the point. Come in. Enough for today.